Innovation is doing better things or doing things better. If you are motivated by those, you will have innovation. It needs ideas and it needs to have impact. And for ideas, you need context. And for impact, you need commitment.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
It's episode 178. Today, we're talking about innovation, allyship, and empowering women in STEM. And we did this all from 3M's global headquarters in St. Paul, Minnesota. So to give you more background, this week we have three amazing guests on the show. We've got Michelle Frumkin, the global marketing manager for the robotics segment in 3M's abrasive systems division. We have Brittany Morin, a robotics application engineer. We've got Jay Shri Sate, corporate scientist and 3M's chief science advocate. And a big strength of this lineup is they're all in different spots in their careers, and they've all focused on different applications at 3M. Now, to give you a bit of background, the whole morning leading up to this interview was very cool. I've collaborated with 3M's abrasive systems division in the past, so when Michelle and I first started talking about this, it just seemed to make sense that I drive to Minnesota and make a little road trip out of it. So I spent a good half day at 3M's headquarters in St. Paul, and if you ever get an opportunity to go there, I highly recommend it. I mean, it's truly an experience. The amount of stuff that 3M makes is so vast, and their world of innovation where we started our morning shows how it all ties together. I think I say it in the interview, or at least I definitely said it during the tour, it's like a materials science masterclass, or really like a high-tech, immersive, hands-on science experience. For example, one of the moments that stuck out to me is that the same type of material and geometries used to reflect light off of street signs, they do that using diamond-grade reflective sheeting. On the flip side, literally, that's an abrasive material that can be used for the sanding and polishing applications that 3M is also very well known for. Anyway, there's just a ton there. I learned for the first time that they also have extreme post-it notes that are water-resistant, built for job sites. So if you ever get the chance, it's a very cool setup that they have there in Minnesota. There's certainly other things I could go on about, but I'll save some of that for the outro. In the meantime, here are three things you can expect from this episode. First, we'll do some icebreakers and hear how Brittany, Jay Shri, and Michelle each got into STEM, and then we start ramping up pretty quickly into our next topic, which is innovation. And we really do discuss this in the context of innovation at 3M. I won't give too much away yet, but I will say we're not just talking about innovation in terms of technology during this part of the conversation. Then finally, about halfway through, we cover a lot of ground on the topic of empowering women in STEM. All three of the women in this interview have built great careers in robotics, engineering, science, areas that we all know have traditionally been very male-dominated. Jay Shri, Michelle, and Brittany all share clear, actionable tips for what individuals and companies can do to attract more women to STEM-related roles, but we also go beyond the specific tactics and we talk about other factors that will help us drive even bigger change in the long run. So you're probably picking it up that this is a big episode, so I would highly encourage you to check out the show notes for this one. You can get there by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/178. And more importantly, if you love this episode and find it valuable, share it, post it on social media, send it to your friends and colleagues. Any way that you can spread the word, that certainly helps out. Again, the show notes page, the links to this episode, just go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/178 and you'll be taken right there. And one last thing before we jump into the interview, I do want to let you know that Automate 2024 is on the horizon on May 6th through 9th in Chicago, Illinois. Automate, the Association for Advancing Automation, who hosts the group. I mean, this is where I first connected with 3M a year ago, and now we're collaborating on projects like this. So I gotta say, that's one of my testimonials from being part of Automate. But if you want to be a part of it, hey, there's 360,000 square feet of space, over 800 exhibitors, 30,000 registrants. This is happening at McCormick Place in Chicago. And since it's relevant to today's conversation, I do want to let you know they are hosting an empowerment forum there the Wednesday morning of the event. It's designed to bring women in the automation industry together to share their experiences and aspirations, as well as build valuable connections and leadership skills. So go to Automate 2024, check out the empowerment forum, manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024. We'll take you straight to the main page. All right, we've got a big crew for today's conversation. So it's time to head to St. Paul, Minnesota. All right, well, welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour. We have a powerhouse crew today, and we want to get to know each of you as we get into our topics. And Michelle, since we're at 3M, I feel like one of the things a lot of folks know 3M right off the bat for are Post-it notes, for example. And you worked in branding for Post-it notes. And we're obviously going to go far beyond that today. But as a bit of an icebreaker, what was it like working as a marketing leader in that space?
Yeah, thanks. So Post-it notes is one of 3M's strongest brands, obviously. And it's really exciting to get to be a part of that. So I came in through the company through corporate strategy, got to work across all of it, and found that really Post-it notes is where I wanted to start the external consumer view. It's fun because there's still a lot of innovation to take place in Post-it notes as well. So we actually got to take this to say, today we play in consumer. How do we brand and take this need of communication to another market? So we innovated and took it into the what's called a Post-it extreme notes, into more of the manufacturing space so that you could have that communication in other places.
Yeah. And Brittany, I want to ask you, because we were talking about your role earlier. You're an application engineer. You started as a project engineer. I'd love to hear from you, so we have a bit of definition around what you do, as to how, what would be an example of what a project engineer does, or what an application engineer does here at 3M.
Yeah, at 3M, project engineers are primarily working at 3M's manufacturing sites to do capital investment projects. So sometimes that'll be implementing a brand new line or upgrading an existing line, different things like that. So I've worked at several different manufacturing sites at 3M to do capital investments. And as an application engineer, I am taking products that 3M makes to 3M customers and helping them use the product in the best way, or become aware of other 3M products that we have and figure out how they could use those for their solutions.
And this next question will go back down the line after this, but I want to hear how each of you got into this industry. And Jayshree, I mentioned I was listening to your TED Talk on the drive here to St. Paul this morning. And one of the lines that jumped out in your TED Talk was that, you know, you grew up in a village in northern India. Your father was a professor, I believe, but you didn't necessarily consider yourself a science type, or that was going to be the path you would go down. So maybe if you could, you know, share your origin story, and then I'd love to hear from Brittany and Michelle how you got into this space as well.
Yeah, well, thank you for listening to my TED Talk. Yeah, I grew up on the campus of an engineering college in northern India, and everybody was a STEM professional. But I just didn't think that I belonged there, because I had this sort of stereotypical view of what an engineer is. And I wasn't that child who was tinkering with toys or pulling stuff apart or even curious to know how they worked. I was interested in playing with them, and I was interested more in the human side of things. And so I never thought of myself as that science and engineering type. However, growing on that campus, growing up there, everybody was encouraged to be in that field. So it was an expectation for me and my brother that we would go into engineering as well. That's how I ended up in engineering.
And Brittany, what about yourself?
I always loved math and science in school growing up, where I definitely was like looking like, how can I keep doing algebra for the rest of my life, like a typical nerd, and enjoying that. And my dad was a mechanical engineer by trade as well, so had that influence in my life that ended up going into college, undecided engineering, and just exploring the different options, and had really enjoyed doing some automated, like small projects. And the project Lead the Way is a high school introductory to engineering class that was available in Iowa at that time, and I think it's expanded since then. And then some college classes where we got to build like a mini robot, and that was really what I enjoyed doing, to to get into this field.
Yeah, and Michelle, as you share your story, I'm in the spirit of manufacturing happy hour. Robotics isn't necessarily the first thing I think of when I think of 3M, for example. It's not necessarily the first thing that comes to mind. So if you could share your story, but also maybe kind of that bar conversation, how do you describe how 3M plays in the robotics and automation spaces if you're having a drink with someone? I just threw a two-part question at you,
yeah,
basically, to wrap it up. But I thought you look like you're ready to handle it.
So the way I think I have the coolest job at 3M, and I've been lucky enough to be able to say that in my last couple roles too. There's a lot of really just uniqueness here. But so what 3M does really well in robotics is help people understand that it's even possible. And being in brand and marketing and business development for that, it's a really unique space to get to do it. Automation can be scary. Robotics can be intimidating for people. And a lot of times, especially for abrasives, they don't even realize it's possible. So how do I take that information and simplify it so the market knows that it's possible and understands there's a lot of different pieces to it, but 3M can help them get all those pieces together correctly. So we don't sell robots. We're not a system integrator, but we work with all those ecosystem players, with the system integrators, with the robot manufacturing companies, with the software companies, to have them put together the recipe of what will work best for the customers and needs and try to make it as simple as possible so they get the best ROI. So all of that comes from having strong brand marketing. Obviously, that's built on all of our application engineering, but being able to translate that simply to someone comes back from how do we do it in Post-it notes? How do you understand the innovation of what took all of 3M to come together to take all those other pieces together to have that simple recipe for someone too?
I was going to say that's one of the things that struck me as I was on the tour of your innovation center this morning is how you're bringing a number of different areas, I feel like under the material science umbrella, how you're bringing all these areas together in what might look like at the surface, a lot of areas that aren't necessarily connected that are. And maybe you can go into that a bit more, because I think seeing the example of leveraging material for abrasives and then on the flip side, literally the flip side, leveraging it for reflective materials was very cool. Can you talk a little bit about that?
From the scientific piece of it, one of you might be able to answer that a little bit better. From the business strategy point of it, I can see how, and I've got to be a part of this too, different parts of 3M, the technology and the business teams come together to solve needs for our customers. So they look and see whether it's a way that we're applying or something or manufacturing it or a piece of a product itself or an end customer need and be able to apply it to unique parts. So what you're referring to is the Fresnel lens used to be part of something used in reflective overhead projectors. We were able to manufacture it to make it less expensive and more flexible to go into schools. And eventually that manufacturing process is able to lead to how we can do micro replication down for abrasives and different products that we have. So a real innovation in how you're creating something, which isn't always an innovation in the end product for the perception when you're starting, but it gets to there and offers more tools in the toolbox for our lab and application engineers to play with. Would you guys have anything to add?
No,
to that?
That's spot on. And I would want to add that we actually do this, what we call uncommon connections, really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a summer intern in abrasives, you know, over 30 years ago. And when I joined the company as a full-time employee, I went into the area of adhesives. But my very first product, my very first idea was something I borrowed from abrasives. Now, you'd say, wow, abrasives and adhesives, and wait till I tell you what the adhesives for. They actually went on diapers for wiggly babies. You would never put abrasives and soft diapers together, but the idea that came from here was able to be commercialized there. So having all these platforms, like you spoke about, Michelle, that and having the exposure to all of that, that is really the secret sauce. That's how ideas sort of take place and allowed to grow in that culture of empowerment, the emphasis on collaboration, and then the communal context that we are here to solve problems, improve lives. And that's why somebody like me, who didn't think that they were the science type, was able to be successful, because that is the part that was missing through the educational journey, which I found at 3M.
Brittany, my next questions, I'm going to start with you, but I want to hear everyone's definition about this, because as we talk about these uncommon connections, a term that has come up a lot here has been innovation. And I feel that 3M has a very true, honest approach to innovation. So I'd love to get each of your definitions on what does innovation mean. So Brittany, we'll start with you. We'll go to Michelle, and then we'll finish with you, Jayshree.
So innovation at 3M, I think, starting with a bigger picture of like, what is the need that we need to solve? So sometimes that comes from an application engineering or marketing role of talking to our customers and figuring out what do they actually need, and then looking at the different resources that are available to us within our own division, within our corporate resources of how could we make that happen. But there's also the aspects of like in manufacturing, when they need to improve the process or want to improve the process for yields or time savings, whatever that is, working with all those resources as well to figure out if there's other manufacturing sites that have done it differently and how they can apply that in their own manufacturing site. So it's really figuring out what the problems are and then using all of our resources to solve them.
Michelle, what would you add to that?
Yeah, so spot on. How do we make things faster, smarter, easier, less expensive, safer, healthier for our customers and for the world? So innovation in a wider space, in that way, in some cases, you're innovating on the product itself to have that happen. And what I get to work on a lot, it's innovating on the business models. So how do we bring things to customers in new ways? How do you have unique revenue streams you might not have before? How do you bring innovation to the company along with the products that you're bringing forward for it? Some of it's in partnerships, too.
Yeah. No, it all makes sense. Jayshree, what would you add? And then I'll summarize here.
Yeah, same thing. I think to me, innovation is doing better things or doing things better. If you are motivated by those, you will have innovation. It needs ideas and it needs to have impact. And for ideas, you need context. And for impact, you need commitment. And at 3M, we have that boundless curiosity. We create that context. And then we have the commitment, which provides us the boundary conditions. We are in this business, solving it for these customers and stuff like that. So from a structural standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, and from a culture standpoint, we can do innovation.
Yeah, and I'm glad you added that in there about the boundary conditions. And maybe take that a step further for us as well, because I think when I look at a company like 3M that has done so many different things, as I learned this morning, Post-it notes weren't created by accident. They were created by an eventual collaboration between two individuals that were developing solutions for different areas. But I think it would be very important for the manufacturing leaders out there that are listening to understand, how does a large company like 3M encourage innovation, but also make sure you're staying within, you know, some tactful boundary conditions that allow you to still stay core to the business. Jayshree, can you talk to that?
Yeah, I think for every organization, depending on where they are at, their vision and their strategy is essentially what provides those boundary conditions. And from a culture perspective, it is the idea that the technologies are owned by the corporate labs and the products are owned by the division labs. So we have the integrated R&D model. And that works really well because it connects science, advancements, technology building blocks, technology platforms to products, markets, customers. And that's the way we connect them. So we are always working on improving our technologies, building those platforms, but they allow us to leverage in a nonlinear fashion in all these different kinds of product areas. So that same adhesive can go in, you know, in cars, planes, trains, automobiles. It can also go against the walls. It can go against paper, as Michelle said. So I think the culture piece that is really critical is the empowerment and the collaboration. Mm-hmm. Because now you've got 15% time that we do at 3M. So you are allowed to work on something that you think is important for abrasives, even though if you may be in adhesives, because you know that that is something that you're empowered to do. Then we try to throw our technical people together all the time. It mm-hmm. is our secret sauce. It's called Tech Forum. And that allows us to be talking about problems, solutions, solutions looking for problems, problems looking for solutions. All of that comes together when people are constantly mingling with each other. And it doesn't have to be in person. It can be through any kind of means. And we have been a global company and we've always communicated with everybody through those means. Now we also have, once you have ideas and you have the collaboration, what do you do now? Well, we have grant programs. So it's like a Shark Tank-like thing mm-hmm. where you can say, I need $20,000 because I think we want to work on this. This is why it's important. This is the technology that we'll use. and let's get this money. And it is a peer group that decides it. So it's perfect for constantly encouraging and socializing the idea that we are innovative, that is an expectation, you are empowered, and then you will have opportunity if you make good on these ideas.
Yeah, and I like some of the things I've heard, maybe some commonalities to these answers. You know, Brittany, earlier you were talking about leveraging the resources you have here to solve problems. I feel like that covers kind of the technology side, Jayshree, that you were talking about. And Michelle, you made a very important comment as well about how you're also looking to innovate on business models as well. And at 3M, you're looking at how all of these technologies fit into the products and markets that you serve along the way.
We'll be back in a moment, but first, a quick word from our sponsor. Gray Solutions is a systems integrator that you've probably heard me talk about on this show before. Maybe you heard our interview with their CEO, Walker Maddox, or maybe you've heard us talk about how the term systems integrator isn't even a term that fully encompasses who they are. Well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Of everything that Gray Solutions does, they are ahead of their time when it comes to helping manufacturers commission new facilities and new lines with confidence. That's because their 3D modeling capabilities are basically like having a crystal ball. If you want to peer into the future of your facility or process upgrade long before you invest, well, then you should definitely check out episode 171, where we interview Gray Solutions VP of Cool Stuff, Greg Powers. Yes, that's his actual title. That's where you'll hear about their unique approach to 3D modeling. While every other company is throwing the term artificial intelligence around with no context, you'll hear how Gray Solutions is using it to provide hyper-accurate 3D models that help manufacturers revolutionize their business. ManufacturingHappyHour.com/171 will take you right there. So hey, commission with confidence. Pick a partner with a proven track record of project success that's always investing in new, innovative ways to get your projects done faster and better. Check out Gray Solutions on this podcast or at graysolutions.com. And now back to today's episode.
One other area I do want to touch on that, Jayshree, you brought up was the 15% time that you can leverage to work on projects that have, let's say, nothing to do with your immediate role or your immediate department. Michelle, since you were there on the tours this morning when that topic came up, can you describe that in very simple terms for someone that might just be getting familiar with kind of the 3M culture and what the 15% terminology you have is, or maybe how it plays out in an example as well?
Sure. So 15% time is a large part of the culture. It's actually a large part of why I decided to come here too when I was recruited. So if you have a passion for something, whether it be something with relevant to your division or business or not, you're able to dedicate 15% of your time in exploring that passion. And since we have such a large toolbox of solutions and technologies and people to be able to draw from, we're able to utilize those in trying to achieve or go after it, and then utilize that Shark Tank opportunity that Jayshree was mentioning about being able to fund it even if needed. So you are always encouraged to be able to keep moving forward with that. And Post-it Extreme Notes is an example of something that came out of part of this. We were looking and seeing what new markets could we play in, but really we were playing around with some of the solutions and thinking about unique ways to do stuff. And it wasn't exactly aligned with what the division was going for at the time, but we got our team together. We were able to invest in it. We actually did a Shark Tank type pitch for it and continued to be able to launch it until we made something that made sense for 3M as an industrial market to be able to go into a new space too.
And we'll wrap this portion of the conversation here in a second. Brittany, since you're an application engineer right now, I'd love to hear from you how you're seeing this play out. You can speak in generalities, you can speak to something specific, it's your choice, but how are you seeing this play out in your role?
For the 15% time, just to confirm.
Yes.
So I guess I want to actually think back to in my prior role right before this, where I was a product engineer. One of the things that I was doing with my 15% time was actually working on a sustainability-centered group. So it was like a ground-up grassroots group of engineers that wanted to do more with sustainability than we currently were doing in that division. And so we created this group called the Happy Polar Bears to look at the different aspects of that division and come up with ideas on how we could make a bigger impact faster than was happening from the top down. And one of the examples was changing the packaging completely on our privacy for your monitors, a privacy film that goes on there so that like when you're in the airport, no one can see what's on your screen, and changing that packaging so that it was much more sustainable for the world's future.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really nice about doing a conversation like this at 3M is it's very tangible to see the type of solutions that you have out there. You're talking about the screens on computers. We talked about Post-it notes earlier, scotch tape. People know a lot of the stuff that 3M does. What I think it's been nice uncovering is some of the things you're doing internally as well, like the Shark Tank, how you bring those things to fruition. So hopefully the manufacturing leaders are taking notes out here. We're going to shift to another topic, which is increasing representation in STEM. I know this is an area that each of you is passionate about. And today, women make up, and I'll share where I got these stats, 48% of the workforce, but just 34% of the STEM workforce, and I think just 16% of robotics and automation. This is according to the National Girls Collaborative Project. But I'd love to understand, you know, what are one of the top barriers we need to overcome as an industry to attract more women to the field of robotics and automation? And we'll go down the line, starting with you, Michelle, then we'll go to you, Brittany, and then go to Jayshree as well. And we've got a handful of questions on this topic, so this is just kind of the first one.
Sure. So I'd be coming at it from a more of a business perspective, but there are not a lot of women that I've interacted with in the business side in robotics. It's a very heavy male influence. Even if you walk the floor of Automate or you're able to work with our different partners, I work with a lot of different men. And it's not something I honestly would have thought of. Even coming into 3M and having abrasives be our oldest division and one of our largest, I was sticking more in the consumer side, starting to learn more about industrial. But you start to see the differentiation that a women's perspective can bring into here. And then when it starts to become recognized and valued is where you want to be able to bring more people in. So it can be little things like your boss or the people around you recognizing you for your achievements. But it's also when you're looking at things with a different perspective. For example, I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And when my 6-year-old was 2, we had a book called Robotics for Babies. And I was able to explain really simply how automation works. And I took that and thought, how do I bring this into my job to be able to show the industry how simple it can be, or at least explain it in a way that's simple? It showcases that we're experts, but that it's not too intimidating to come in. So women bring in a very different perspective and go at things in a different way. So valuing that as a way to bring more people in.
Love the talk on bringing a different perspective. Brittany, what are some of the things you would add to that?
I think one that I strongly believe in is bringing awareness much sooner into people's lives. So I've done a lot of outreach with middle school and high school girls and boys. But a lot of times when I have talked to high schoolers that are maybe like junior seniors, where you're like, this is the crowd that we want to interact with because they're starting to think about college, it actually a lot of times feels too late. They already have something in their mind of like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Like, yeah, that sounds kind of cool, but I've never thought about that. And like, I need to decide what I'm doing the rest of my life tomorrow, so too late. But when I've gotten into more with like the middle schoolers, it seems like they're much more open-minded of like, oh, I didn't know that this existed, and like learning about all the different opportunities that exist out there. Then they could be like, robots are really cool. And I think that Minnesota as a state has a lot of robotic competitions and things where it is being introduced much more here. But I grew up in a small town in Iowa where there was not any robotic competitions, and I had very little introduction to robots. So it was really like when I was at the University of Minnesota where I got to see more robotics in action and like, wow, this is like something that I could actually go into, and starting to try to find how I could get into this area and what the opportunities were in robotics and automation.
Yeah, so we've gotten one answer focused on the how do we get more women into the field starting early. We talked about the value, bringing additional perspectives to the field as well. Maybe we'd call it the why. Jayshree, what would you add to wrap up this question?
I think role models is important. So just the fact that people would see Michelle and Brittany dealing with robotics and automation, and that's just what they normally do and normalize it, I think that is huge. People want to see representation, and that makes them want to aspire to those roles. In addition to this aspiring, I think inspiring part is also very critical. And the way some of these fields, the way they were laid out, has been rather male-centric. So it appeals more to the male psyche. It is more about the thing, not what the thing can do. We were just having this conversation. And I've seen that in my kids. For my son, the thing is enough. For my daughter, it's why. She wants to know the context. So it is a balance of the content and the context that we have to get right. And then we will see a lot more girls joining the field.
I like that differentiation between, you know, hey, maybe boys are generally more attracted to the thing itself, the technology, versus where girls may be more attracted to why it does that, what the thing can do.
Yes. And there's data supporting that.
Yes, absolutely.
They have done research and they have found that at a very early age that it manifests itself. So spot on.
And I love the way you described it, because that's a new insight for me that I hadn't necessarily considered before.
Next round of our interviews coming up right after a word from our sponsor. If you want to empower your frontline leaders through standard work and skills development, then you need to check out Swipe Guide. Their collaborative platform lets frontline teams coordinate instructions, job aids, and training to optimize processes. But don't take it from me. Hear it from their clients. Here's a good one. Swipe Guide has been a game changer for our organization. We're now able to train our employees more quickly and effectively, and we've also seen a decrease in the number of errors and mistakes that are made. Swipe Guide was recently awarded Easiest Company to Do Business With and ranked one of the most user-friendly software solutions in the UX Design Awards. Plus, they're trusted by industrial frontrunners around the world, including PepsiCo, ABB, and Heineken. Speaking of Heineken, if you want to hear what it's like when Swipe Guide is implemented on a global scale, then head back and listen to episode 167, where Heineken's own Joris Stolk and Swipe Guide CEO Wilhelmijn Schneider discuss the impact this platform has had on their frontline teams and international brewing operation. Check out Swipe Guide today by going to swipeguide.com. And now, back to today's episode.
You know, another question, we talked about what got you started in this field earlier. Jayshree, we'll start with you on this one and go the opposite way this time. What has motivated you to stay in the field? Because I think, you know, there's always this two-part question in the workforce in general, right? It's like, how do we attract talent, but then how do we get folks to stay? What has, for you personally, and what you've seen, motivated you to stay in the STEM field?
For me, 3M was my only job, my first job, and I've been here for 30 years. This is my 30-year ring. And the reason why I am so excited every day is because of the possibilities that we have, the culture that we have, the opportunity that we have. And in the last 6 years, so exactly 6 years ago, I was named the Chief Science Advocate. And that's another, yet another platform which inspires me even more, because now I see the difference that we can make externally, talking about our science advocacy and bringing attention to these important topics with all the work we do. So I'm not sure if Michelle has shared, we created a docuseries called Not the Science Type. So you know us for our Post-it notes and for our N95 respirators, but we innovate on social front as well. So we created this docuseries, which essentially shows the journey of four women. And we just want to say, it doesn't matter what your race, gender, ethnicity is, science will be better off for that diversity. So science needs you, and science needs you to be you. And it's amazing, the advocacy platform that we have and the longstanding commitment. That is what inspires me every day. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just excited not just to work on this thing, create those innovations and have that financial impact, but also have social and cultural impact and innovation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love the breadth of the impact. I also like that you brought up the Not the Science Type series as well. For those out there listening, I'll make sure we link up to that in the show notes if you want to check that out as well.
And sorry if I may add, you may want to add the link to Skilled as well, because the other thing we realized is very important to the abrasive automation and robotics industry, which is there is a dearth of skilled trades professionals, and they are needed to do all the things that we want to do, create these good products, but who's going to manufacture them? How are they going to get put to use? So we are looking out for what is needed in the science ecosystem and supporting that. And both our docuseries have actually won awards. So please watch them. and be inspired.
Yes, you brought that up earlier. I'm going to make sure folks are able to catch that. Brittany, I want to get your take on this answer as well in terms of what's motivated you to stay here in the field.
I definitely am a strong believer that science touches everything around us and is constantly propelling life forward. Like anything that you interact with every day, there is some amount of science that went into that object, that device, whatever you're dealing with. And so I just look at things that way and like know that we need a lot of people in the STEM field to keep making improvements to the way that the world works. And additionally, I just really love a challenging problem. So give me something exciting to solve and I'm going to be motivated to keep doing that. So I definitely think to convince people to stay in STEM, providing them with challenging things to work on and great environments, collaborative, like Jayshree mentioned, then they're going to be happy to do what they're doing and work with great people around them to continue solving these great challenges.
Excellent. Michelle, what would you add to this one?
It's really fun. So you want to be energized every day. You want to work with people who are energized every day. And especially in robotics and automation, the industry is moving quickly. There's unique things to solve. You're learning how things are getting made in new ways. Software is always evolving. It's really exciting and fun. And then take that in the context of 3M, where you really can be who you are and you're encouraged to be that way. And you can work on all these different parts with all these different people. It's just a fun place to be.
I want to extend this conversation in terms of, you know, getting more people comfortable talking about this topic, because I think the industry is doing a number of the right things to start recognizing that we need to do more in this space. But not everyone, you know, particularly I would say a lot of male allies don't necessarily know what they can do to be a part of the solution and be an advocate as well. Or say to themselves, hey, there's a women in manufacturing event going on. Is this an event for me? What is the right way to get involved? What is the right way to talk about these topics? Michelle, Brittany, Jayshree, we'll go in that order this time.
One of the things that helps keep me the most involved when I have advocates helping is just appreciating what you're able to bring. So whether it's a different perspective or even if it's the same work and sharing that upward as much as possible. It seems like something small, but even if you're cross-functional, if you're leadership, if you're one of the CEOs, if you're able to continue showcasing the women and everyone in your workforce and the hard work that they do, it really sets in to say, okay, I feel like I'm valued here and it makes sense for me to stay and continue.
Brittany?
I'd say like thinking of it on a peer-to-peer basis. So people that I'm working with every day is like amplifying the work that I'm doing or even just a suggestion that I have. It's a common situation where in a room of 20 people, I could be the only woman or one of two or three. And it's a common in the stats that I'm sure Jayshree will mention that it's easy for women to kind of get talked over just based on that dynamic in the room. If there's 19 men and one woman, it's just something that naturally happens. So for there to be an ally in the room that can be like, let's go back to what Brittany mentioned or this work that Brittany did or this idea that Brittany had, because sometimes it'll get overheard. And then even it's common where a different male that's probably not an ally or at least unconsciously could be like, oh, I have this idea. And it's actually the same idea that a woman has already brought up. And so if there's an ally in the room that could be like, oh, yeah, Brittany said that earlier, or this other woman that's in the room. So really just amplifying what they're bringing to the table. And if there's somebody that you don't hear speaking up as much, directly asking them, hey, do you have any ideas that you could share with this? Or what is something that you've worked on that you could bring forward? So directly getting them to participate in that conversation.
I love that. Either amplification, making sure a voice that was raised gets the proper recognition, or making sure folks that might not be speaking at the table are getting the chance to speak as well. So great action for the folks out there that are listening. Jayshree, we've had a lot of good tips on this so far. I want to hear what you would bring.
Yeah, I mean, these are perfect. These are things that people can implement right away.
Mm-hmm.
And just be conscious of them and implement them. I also say that there is the systemic part of it that also needs to change. It isn't just the people. It is the system as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have been in the system long enough, you just don't see it. And so I tell people on this, I've been on this for about a month now, is look at your systems and see how the merit or the myth or the multiplicity of meritocracy is playing out. what are the behaviors and things you reward and how it ends up marginalizing someone or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are ways in which behavioral things that get rewarded may stack the thing against one gender versus the other. And so you have to really examine those systems and practices. The second piece I say is, if you are really looking to expand diversity in a system that lacks it, then you have to be way more intentional than you think just a few things here and there would do it. Those templates that you may have may not work for the people that you are trying to help. So intentionality is the second thing. The third thing I say is, somehow, somewhere, it became known that STEM fields and business fields really don't need any kind of social science. Social science is where it's at. If you really want to make people feel welcome, figure out what the social science said, not your templates and your tools or your techniques. It's how you're using them. So science and social science is critical to that. And the last thing I say, if you are creating a culture or a curriculum or teaching or whatever you're doing, think about community and communality in those. Because if they're not embedded in there, then you're asking people to do something that's not baked in. Bake it in. Then those principles become easier. Because it is a lot of work, actually, to go to someone and say, hey, Chris, you know what you said at that meeting? Maybe you should have acknowledged that I had said that before. It is a lot of work. It is too much to ask, and it is not the responsibility of women to constantly do that. So I really like the idea of going at it from a system fashion. So these topics need to come out from miscellaneous into the mainstay. The myth of meritocracy, intentionality and intersectionality, the science of society and how it works, social sciences, and then culture and curriculum, getting the more community and communality.
I like that we've gotten the micro tactics in these answers, making sure you have the advocates in your company, making sure leadership is advocating, the things to do in a meeting to make sure women are heard, make sure points of view are heard, make sure diverse points of view are heard, and then hearing that the systematic changes you're talking about as well, and acknowledging, being intentional. I love how you brought it all together. Michelle, it looked like you had something to add.
I want to add one more thing too. Something you can implement, and it's very important, is maternity leave. So maternity leave, paternity leave, and understanding that parents, and especially if you're the default parent, which is typically a woman but not always, is going to have a different life balance and different perspective that'll be beneficial at work, but you still need to be able to respect that that is taking place. And companies that allow for that, like 3M has a 6-month maternity leave, really does make a difference. When I was having my first child, it's something we all explore. Is this a company you want to stay at that will support you after that and support you during or not? It makes a much bigger impact, not beyond just the time, but how you feel supported at the place that you're working at, that you have it available.
I love all the specifics we brought up. I always learn something from each of these conversations, and it's on me just as much as anyone else listening to go out there and bring these to practice. And Michelle, I like what you brought up there at the end, the specific example of maternity leave. That's a huge one. Would either of you have an additional story to add of how you've seen this play out in practice in your careers?
I can tell you that I really appreciate that the younger generation, the men, are taking parental leave. That is what more people, if they can, should do, because that is a normalizer, an equalizer that is incredible, that it is understood. If you became a parent, it doesn't matter who you are going to take a certain amount of time. So that just normalizes it rather than always being the default that women are going to be taking it.
If I were to walk away from this conversation and think about what my tangible go-do action would be, it would be being aware, being intentional, and putting the effort into making sure representative voices are heard in our industry. What would be your final call to action for everyone out there as we wrap today's conversation to continue to help us create a more equitable workforce for women, for people of color, underrepresented groups in this industry?
I'd be more speaking what was already said before by Brittany and Jayshree, but being able to actually see it. So if you have women working for you, or if you want to have more women working for you, showcasing them doing those jobs is really going to make a difference, impact society around you to bring more people in, impact the younger generation to show them that it's possible.
Excellent. Brittany?
I think building off Michelle, my go-to is encouraging more outreach. So into schools and younger children to have them aware of the different manufacturing options that exist and the different STEM opportunities, and giving them tours as much as possible is another way to like really open their eyes. Even studying mechanical engineering in college, I didn't fully understand what all of these different things were until I was actually at a manufacturing site. And it's like, this is an extruder rather than just a text box in a textbook having a box that's like, this represents an extruder. It's like hard to connect the dots. So actually being able to bring that to younger people for them to understand what they could do if they went into this field.
Love that. And Jayshree, take us home.
Yes. Bottom line, as you talk to leaders, let them know that they recognize that our world requires innovation. Innovation needs science. Science demands diversity. Diversity warrants equity.
Excellent. And you made a comment in your TED Talk. I'll go back to that one more time. You asked the question of how many innovations, how many scientists, how much of this are we missing out on because we don't have an equitable situation right now, because these systematic disadvantages exist. So I thought that was a great point. I am linking up to the TED Talk as well. The one thing I'll add to this as well is we've been talking about this on a podcast today. I want everyone out there to know that you can have this conversation at lunch with your coworkers. You should be having meetings about it. Like, this isn't a type of discussion that should be limited to a podcast. I would encourage everyone out there to have conversations like the ones we're having today with your colleagues, with your leadership, to help be part of the change as well. So Jayshree, Brittany, Michelle, thank you so much for jumping on Manufacturing Happy Hour today.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. We appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thanks for listening, and thank you to 3M for helping make this happen. Huge kudos to those three for appearing on the show. Thank you, Carl and Michelle, for helping coordinate the visit. Thank you, Andy, for the excellent tour of the world of innovation. Obviously, for most of you, I'm just starting to list names here, but that just goes to show you that there are a lot of passionate people over there at 3M that deserve some praise. So again, thanks for helping create this episode to the entire 3M team. On to some of my takeaways from this week. First, just thinking about innovation in terms of a large company like 3M. If you're like me, I'm guessing when you think about innovation, you might default to smaller companies that are inherently more nimble. But I think Brittany, Michelle, and Jayshree all demonstrated how much innovation can happen when you have the right infrastructure in place. That 15% free time to work on projects outside of your immediate field, I think, is a perfect example of that. So whether you work at a large or small company, there's no excuse not to create paths and means to innovation. And you know, I didn't mention it during the intro, but I do feel 3M was the perfect place to have a candid conversation about women in STEM. Michelle actually pointed something out on our tour of 3M called the McKnight Principles. I'm going to get to Michelle's point here in a second, but for some context, William McKnight was someone who rose through the ranks at 3M in the early 20th century and eventually became president in 1929 and chairman of the board in 1949. If I were to summarize the McKnight Principles from my own perspective, it's a very quick manifesto on how companies can encourage innovation to make their organizations relevant for over a century. It's one of the things that's allowed 3M to stay relevant for over a century. And you know what? Since it's only three short paragraphs, I'm just going to read it to you. Here it is. As our business grows, it becomes increasingly necessary to delegate responsibility and to encourage men and women to exercise their initiative. This requires considerable tolerance. Those men and women to whom we delegate authority and responsibility, if they are good people, are going to want to do their jobs in their own way. Mistakes will be made, but if a person is essentially right, the mistakes he or she makes are not as serious in the long run as the mistakes management will make if it undertakes to tell those in authority exactly how they must do their jobs. Management that is destructively critical when mistakes are made kills initiative. And it's essential that we have many people with initiative if we are to continue to grow. All right, end of quote. Not only do I feel this is extremely good advice, but Michelle pointed something out to me, and that even back then, when STEM fields were even more male-dominated back in the early 20th century, William put emphasis on making sure women were included in their culture of innovation. And you know, that was almost 100 years ago, so not only was 3M a bit ahead of their time, but Michelle then pointed out that their current VP of the Abrasive Systems division that she's in is also a woman. So, hey, thank you, 3M, for continuing to be leaders, living out and demonstrating the power of creating a more equitable workforce. Whew. All right, and now that we've gotten through the big stuff, it's time to wrap up this week's episode. First, if you want to learn more, if you want to check out any of the resources mentioned in this episode, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/178. That takes you to the show notes page. There you can connect with Michelle, Brittany, and Jay Shree. And also I've got links to those docu-series that Jay Shree brought up, Not the Science Type, as well as Skilled. I also want to thank our sponsors for this week, Gray Solutions, Swipe Guide, as well as A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. You know that Automate 2024 is right around the corner. It's one of my favorite trade shows of the year. That's on May 6th through 9th, 2024 in Chicago, Illinois. And I mentioned it at the start, but hey, take note of the Empowerment Forum. If you're a woman in industry, you're going to want to check out this event. You know, I just mentioned the VP of the Abrasive Systems Group at 3M. Her name is Adi Leviathan. She will be part of a panel that morning during that session. Make sure to go there. And of course, at Automate, the show in general, it's bigger than ever. 360,000 square feet, over 800 exhibitors, and over 30,000 of your manufacturing industry peers that will be registered there. I'm going to be there. manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024 will take you to the main page. So hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Hope you learned a lot. Hope you will take action as well. And with that, I'm going to say, stay innovative, stay thirsty, and we'll catch you again next week. Cheers!
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.